Mishnah Yomis for Friday, the 23rd day of Tishrei, Tovshin Peihei, in Chutz La'aretz Simchas Torah. Masechet Bava Metzia, Perek Shmini, Mishnah Hei. Hamoicha Zeisav La'etzim, person who sells his olive trees to his friend so that his friend can cut them and down and use the wood for a fuel. And the buyer, in the meantime, left them in the land, in the karka, in the land of the seller. But also pachos merevis laso, and they produced very, very small quantity of olives, very inferior olives, less than a revis of a log of oil could be produced out of a saw of olives. A saw is about 12 liters of olives. And producing only something like 86 grams of oil. Very, very little. When that happens, hara elo shel bal hazeisim, then that we say that those olives can be kept by the person who's bought these trees, the bal hazeisim. However, also revis lasa, what happens if they made the olives were not that bad, you could get a revis of a log per saw, and for sure this will apply if you can get more than that. Then we have a machalikus, then you have zeomer zaisagodlo, the buyer maintains, I deserve to keep the olives because they grew, they're my olive trees, I bought the olive trees. Meantime, zeomer adzigidlo, and the landowner, the person in whose land the trees are growing, says, well, it's my earth that contributed to it, my land that contributed to the olives being grown. If not my land, it wouldn't have grown. Yachleiku. Then they divide, they split the amount of olives between them. The Gemara explains that if he had sold the trees on condition that they cut them down straight away, then even if they produce less than a revis of a saw, they belong to the owner of the karka, the owner of the land. And if he sold them on the condition that he can, that there was a condition that the, under terms where the buyer of the trees would be able to cut them down whenever he wants, then even if they made more than, or even if these olives would produce more than a revis per asar, or a revis or more, they would belong to the owner of the one who bought the trees. When the Mishnah is talking about this case of Yachloiko, it's a case where he sold the trees for the purpose of firewood, but he didn't stipulate when. There's no, it's been left in the grey area. Then in such a case, we say, that's where we have to look and say how many olives are really being produced. If there's a substantial quantity that would produce at least a quarter of a log, after net expenses, after the expenses for harvesting and for pressing. If you take that away, you would end up taking all those costs off. You would still end up with a quarter of a log out of one saw of olives. Then they belong to the owner of the land. If they produce less than that, then they belong to the one who's bought the trees, because we say that the owner of the land would have been moichel, would have forgone that small quantity of olives. Shotaf nohar zeisof. What happens if a river had swept the trees of Reuven, the olive trees of Reuven, unasonam l'sech stechavere, and put them in the field of his friend? And there they grew, the trees took root, and now produce fruits. Ze'amar ze'sagidlu, Reuven says, well, it's my trees, I bought, they belong to me. I don't care if they fell into your land, they belong to me. I want the olives. Ze'amar atzegidlu, the other man says, no, it was my land, my soil, that helped these, that made these fruits. Shimon says that's what the seller says, the one in whose, not the seller, the one in whose land these trees washed into and grew. Then Yachloiku, we say they divide again the olives between them. The Gemara explained once again that we're talking about a specific case, that is where the olive trees have been uprooted and swept with the earth or the soil that was around their roots, in such a way that they could live without being planted in the ground. They could live without the soil. They could live just with the soil that was around their roots, and that would be enough. In which case, any fruits or olives that would grow after they've been uprooted and washed and replanted in someone else's soil, those any fruits growing there would be exempt from olive, because the tree was able to live independently of the other person's soil. So it's not considered like a new growth or like a new plantation. It's considered just a continuation of the tree's life, and therefore it's permitted. If, however, there was not the... And that's the case we're talking about in our Mishnah. Now, for this reason, any fruits that do grow in the first 3 years after they've been replanted or they've been put in someone else's garden by the river that swept them there, for that reason we say Yachaleku, they divide the fruits. Why? Because even though it was the soil of Shimon, right, in whose land that these trees were blown into or swept into, even though it's the soil of Shimon that made the fruits grow, but at the same time Reuben can argue that if not for the mounds of earth around my trees that got uprooted with the trees, then you Shimon, you wouldn't be able to eat from them because of Arlo. So my trees have contributed and your soil has contributed, so we divide the fruits. If, however, we're talking about after those 3 years, then everything belongs to Shimon, the owner of the karka, the owner of the land. Why? Because he can say to Reuben, listen, by the time now 3 years have gone, I could have planted the olive trees myself and I could have eaten the fruits. However, Shimon will still need to pay Reuven for the trees, for the value of how much they would be worth to sell for replanting them. Also, the Gemara says that if Reuven would have said, "I want to take the trees from your field, Shimon. I know the river blew them into your land, but they're my trees." If Reuven demands that, we will not listen to him. He will not win the case. And the reason is because of a special halacha called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We want the land of Israel to be settled. We want more trees, more fruit trees. I.e., since Reuben already had trees growing in his field, he's going to plant new ones to replace them. And his old ones will be staying in the fields of Shimon. And this will be better for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because you're going to have an increase in trees, in fruit trees, etc. But if we're going to say that Shimon has to give back to Reuven his trees, well, Shimon's not going to plant any trees instead of them, just like he didn't have earlier on. So therefore there'll be a net loss to the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore we say Reuven cannot demand his trees re-returned. Mishnah Vav. A person who rents a house out to his friend for a certain amount per month. He didn't give a fixed time, an expiry date. But if it's in winter time, he can't tell him, that's it, get out of my house now. You're not. I need my house. You can't rent it anymore. You can't do that in the winter. I.e. minachag v'yara pesach, from chag, which is Sukkot, and until Pesach. This is the winter time. You cannot throw him out of the house. In summer, however, if the landlord wants to terminate the lease or terminate the rental accommodation before Pesach, in the summer, he has to tell him in the summer, Shloshim Yom, he has to give him notice of 30 days. That means, in the case, let's say before Sukkot, because we said from Sukkot onwards, Pesach, he can't send him out, he can't terminate the rental. But in the if he does it in summer, he still has to give 30 days notice. So let's say before Sukkot, he'd have to give notice by the 15th day of Elul. Now this is talking about an ordinary town, not a big city. Uvakrakim, but in the big cities, where there's a demand for accommodation is very high, and all during the year it's hard to get apartments. Echad yemosach chama ve'echad yemosach shama. Both in the summer and in the winter, 12 chodesh, one has to give notice 12 months before terminating a person's right to have accommodation. Now, just like the landlord has to tell the tenant and give him that notice, so also the tenant must give notice to the landlord of 30 days before going out, and in a big city, 12 months. And that's to give a chance for the landlord to find another tenant, so that they're not leaving his house empty. And if he doesn't give notice, then he can't leave until he pays him rental for that notice period. Uvachandoyos. What about in shops? Since the shopkeepers tend to give credit, then they need a longer period of time in order to collect their debts. So more time is required for notice. And therefore, echad ayaros v'echad krakim, whether it's a small village or big cities, in either case, 12 chodesh, it's 12 months that the landlord must give notice before he leaves, and also the tenant. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Chanos shel nachtomin. If it's a shop belonging to bakers, v'shel tzaboim, or dyers, people who dye cloths or dye fabrics, shel lishonim, then the landlord has to give 3 years' notice before he can let go or free up the place to tell the tenant to go. The reason is, the Gemara explains, because they tended to give a lot more credit to their customers than other people. And for that reason, their three-year period was set. The Miri, however, writes that this explanation of Rashi doesn't appeal to him. He says, from where do we know that these shopkeepers, these particular industries, give more credit than anyone else? He rather learns that the Torah, that the bother of giving, of moving, and from house to house is very great, because they need suitable buildings to accommodate their large kalim that they use, bakers and dyers, and they also need a lot of water. They tend to use a lot of water for their work, and most houses are not suitable for that.